ॐ नमः श्रीयतिराजाय विवेकानन्दसूरये सच्चित्सुखस्वरूपाय स्वामिने तापहारिणे. वै इस् देर् सो मच् आफ् ईविल् इन् दिस् वर्ल्ड्? वै इस् देर् सो मच् आफ् सफरिङ्ग्? वै इस् इट् दट् गुड् पीपल् सफर् सो मच्? वै इस् इट् ईविल् पीपल् सीम् टु बि प्रोस्परिङ्ग् सो मच्? This is one of the unsolvable questions that arise again and again in this world. Swamiji is discussing from this idea of evil, and he gave, according to his idea, three ideas. They are not answers. They are three types of cues to understand what is the nature of this world. But before that, I would like to narrate one incident. You know, Swamiji Narendranath, at one point of his life, he suffered terribly. Physically, just imagine, his family was spending 1,000 rupees a month in those days. The moment his father died, everyone turned against him. That hurt Swamiji even more than anything else. The people who would have fallen on their heads to do the bidding of any one of the family members, the moment his father died, they left, as we say, as the ants leave, as soon as the food disappears. They just disappeared. Not only disappeared, they turned against him. It was a eye-opener for Swami Vivekananda. And he was born with such a compassionate heart. Very difficult to understand Swami Vivekananda. Outwardly he appears to be hard crust. But inside, he was like butter. He used to weep worse than any one of us. He felt it too deeply. His family was in trouble. They were very good people. They only helped other people. And yet, they had to go through so much of suffering. So the question arose in his mind, why in the kingdom, in the creation of this compassionate Lord, that so much of suffering, so much of evil has come? He searched hard. Everywhere in the world, he did not get the answer. One day, it was said, he was returning exhausted from searching for a job. And as he was approaching his house, he fell down unconscious. He had an indescribable experience. We do not know because he never disclosed what was the experience. He said, this is the solution. This is the answer for the question, why is there so much of evil in this world? I have been trying to understand what could be that vision, what could be that answer, that why there is so much of evil in this world. I don't know, I have some ideas about it, but from what I gathered from Swami Vivekananda's lectures, not only Jnana Yoga, but all of his complete works, we get three answers. The first answer is, existence itself is endowed with both good and evil. Life and death, good and evil, happiness and unhappiness, it is part of the very fabric of life itself. This was what Buddha was talking about when he said, life is full of suffering. But higher than that, there is something is there. If at all anything helps us to move forward, through experience we can understand only one thing. What is it? Suffering. Without suffering, nobody was awakened. Nobody could be awakened. Strange, paradoxical, but this is the only truth. When we suffer, we are forced to search for an answer. This is the higher level of answer. From that point of view, suffering is good. A student spends, as we call, midnight oil, burns midnight oil, a mountaineer. He climbs with a terrible backpack. Now sometimes they show they're climbing any mountain. Terrible. They are unable to take a breath, and yet the greatest joy lies in that achievement. This you can apply in any field that we want. Artists, scientists, administrators, everyone has to go through that. Suffering, in that sense, at the moment of suffering it is not pleasant, but the after results are extremely good. Is this an answer? No, that's not an answer. But there is an answer which the scripture gives, especially Advaita Vedanta gives. I will deal with it from the point of a devotee and from the point of a man of knowledge, bhakta and jnana. From the viewpoint of a bhakta, a devotee, God can be only good. A lover can be only beloved and good, all goodness. For such a beloved Lord, good God, it is impossible to create evil. But it is like climbing steps that takes us to God. That is the bhakta's answer, why there is an evil. So that God is hastening us, you come to me and you'll be free. Remember what Swami Vivekananda had chanted. He initiated people of America at the Parliament of Religions. Shrunvantu Vishve Amrutasya Putraha Aye Dhamani Divyani Tastu Vedaham Etam Purusham Mahantam Aditya Varnam Tamasa Parasta. Then comes Tameva Viditva Atimrutyumeti. Only knowing that Purusha. And who is that Purusha? Tat Tvam Asi. Na Anya Pantha Vidyate Ayanaya. There is no other way. That means what? You will not get a solution in this world. The answer lies outside the evil. That is what Advaita Vedanta wants to say. That is what the Jnani wants to say. Looked at from the highest point of view, there is no evil. Now we can quote Swami Vivekananda's answer about what is life and reconcile it from this viewpoint. Swami Vivekananda was asked, what is life? He gave three answers. The first answer he gave is, life is a school. Second answer, life is a gymnasium. Third answer, life is a circus. They look apparently as contradictory answers, but no, they are all right answers, but at three different levels. From beginner's point of view, life is a school, means we have to learn hard lessons. Do we learn the lessons? Swami Vivekananda himself says, no, we do not learn the lessons. We do, ultimately, but it takes a long time to learn that, my son, if you want to be in this world happy, this is the lesson you will have to learn. Once you learn the lesson, then you can cope how to be in this world. The second answer he gave, life is a gymnasium. Where do you go? To the gymnasium to develop muscles. What muscles? We mentioned it, you know, defining what is education. Physical, intellectual, moral, aesthetic, legal, and spiritual. So many levels we have to develop. All the levels are necessary. And each higher level includes the lower level. So life is a school where through experience we learn lot of things. And learning means what? We understand. This is the nature of the world and we try to cope with life as best as we can. But that doesn't seem to be the right answer, because why should at all there be, okay, I learned how to cope, why at all should I be made to go through this rigmarole of coping with it? After all, I am a child of the divine. The third final answer comes. There are two views, Vyavaharika level and Paramarthika level. From where we are, life is a school, life is a gymnasium. But once we go beyond body and mind, then comes the paramarthika level, spiritual level. What is the answer? Life is a circus. In circus, you know, it looks as though everybody is going through a lot of hard work. There is no hard work. Have you ever seen a circus? It's very wonderful, you know. A huge man with bulging muscles, he comes for grunts and lifts these heavy weights like that, and you are tensing as though you are lending him strength, so that he appears to be stumbling also. Ramakrishna also watched circus. Don't hesitate. And he gave several examples. One example was an English woman was running on a horseback, and every time a huge iron loop comes, she flies through that and lands exactly on the back of the thing. What was his point? That it is all a matter of hard practice day and night. How many times she must have fallen and broken her hands and legs, that is not mentioned. Sadhana is necessary for anything in this world. Life is a circus, means what? It is a circus, it is not real. So this fellow comes, grunts, And everybody is clapping. Oh, such a huge weights he lifted. He goes. One chikka wala, you know, buffoon comes. He puts all those things under his armpits and then he walks up. From the paramarthika level, from the point of Atman, what is the answer? Evil does not exist at all. That is the answer. So where is the question of answering the question that why is there evil in this world? You cannot question something which doesn't exist at all. But we should not take it from here by reading a book. We should take it only from our point of view. Is there something? So to cope with this, Vedanta comes out with three answers. What is the answer? What is the question? Why is there evil? That was the answer we dealt until now. How to cope with the evil is an entirely different question. So we give. First comes, if a person doesn't believe in God, the only answer is, well, that is the nature of the world. First answer. But if someone says, I don't believe in God, but I believe in my karma phala, you know, the law of karma. Then you say, if I am suffering, and then we are very well aware, even when we are suffering, everybody else is not suffering. There are some people under the same circumstances, not only they do not suffer, they seem to be positively enjoying, reveling in that situation. So that means I must have done some karma phala. This is what Hindus, Jains, Buddhists and Sikhs, we accept that. This is the second answer. What is the question? How to cope with evil. But there are people who do not believe in past life. If they do not believe in past life, there is the question of law of karma doesn't arise. But that does not answer many questions. Why is a child just born, baby, is suffering from diabetes, terrible diabetes, or some limbs are missing, disabled, mentally retarded, autistic, so many things. There is no answer. Parents are good, family is good, environment is good, one child is good in the same family, why the other child is not good? Why am I discussing so much about evil? First of all, because Swamiji raises, that is what is called Maya. This is the, don't forget, this is the topic of Maya by Swami Vivekananda. First question was Maya and delusion. Second lecture was Maya and the growth of the concept of God. And the third lecture we will deal with Maya and freedom. Maya and freedom. If there were to be no Maya, the question, the idea, the aspiration of freedom also never arises. If you are not suffering, then the question of searching for an answer, how to get rid of suffering, doesn't arise at all. Is it necessary then? There is no evil, there is no suffering, there is no very, you know, the manifestation of potentiality never comes. That is why suffering is very necessary. So why am I raising? Because we are all in that evil, in that suffering, in two forms. Now, that's what I want to clarify before I go further. The moment we hear the word evil, we think suffering alone is evil. But according to Vedanta, not to realize how great you are, because that's what you are, is the greatest evil. This is what Patanjali Rishi helps us in understanding this. So he says, he gives the definition. What is avidya? He gives four characteristics. Anitya, ashuchi, dukkha, anatmasu. Shuchi, nitya, shuchi, sukha, atma buddhi, avidya. There are things which are changing all the time. Everything in this world is changing. Anitya. Everything in this world, anitya. But all the time, something is happening. We are slowly growing, manifesting our divinity. Ashuchi. There are so many things, what is called, we would not consider even touching them, even looking at them. But so long we are under delusion, we think. Everything is ashuchi because even at the moment when it appears to be pure, clean, for example, nice pies. Anyway, there is a nice story just now, suddenly I remembered, you know. A guru was trying to teach his disciple how to be humble. And then he gave the instruction. Be humble and find out everything has got some better quality than you. You are the worst of the worst. The disciple, what he did, I think my guru wanted to make me give up attachment to things. So he gave up all his property, everything. But the guru gave the same instruction. Then he gave up wearing clothes, etc. Then the guru gave the same instruction. The disciple couldn't understand. Then he thought, probably this body is the most impure thing in this world. My guru wants me to commit suicide. That's what he understood. So he was about to commit suicide. The guru called him, chided him and said, you dull-headed fellow, you don't understand what I am speaking to you. You better go and find out something worse than you. So the man went on searching the earth, the grass, the insect, everything he found out. The moment he started looking, is there something which I do not have, which this thing has got? He started finding something unique within everything. And he was searching and searching. He couldn't find anything worse than himself. One day, he went out to answer calls of nature. And then he answered the calls of nature, looked at his own feces and said, this must be the worst thing in this world. I am better than this. He was about to scoop up to take to his guru show, I am better than this. The moment his hand approached that one, a horrible voice came, stop, don't touch me anymore. So he was stunned. Faces were speaking to him and said, what is the matter? The faces were replying, you know, before I came into your wretched contact, I was such a first class paisan, fit to be offered to God. And once I came in contact with you, this was what I have become. I don't know what is going to happen to me if you touch me a second time. Don't touch me. Then he became enlightened and said that everything in this world has got something which I do not have. Humility is the greatest spiritual virtue. What is humility? See something great in everybody, in everything. That is called humility. In other words, see God in everything. That is called humility. Anyway, from the highest paramarthika level, there is no evil at all. But we do not understand it, but a glimpse of what it is, we could hint at. When a person who is suffering from the greatest problems, evil in this world, even God has blessed him with one particular state. What is it called? Deep sleep, sushupti. At that time, is he free or not? Does he have a question? Why am I suffering? And what is the solution, etc.? That is why it is called Anandamaya Kosha. It is the sheath of pure bliss. Bliss means beyond dualities, beyond happiness and unhappiness. Every single day, we are going through it. Now, what is Samadhi? Consciously attaining to that state is called Samadhi. And imagine, Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, Swamiji, direct disciples, Ramana Maharshi, Jesus, Buddha, Ramakrishna, all these were such people. Every saint is such a person. When they open their eyes, what do you think they will see? They don't see as we see ourselves. They see from with the eyes of God. So what are we talking about today? Extensively we discussed in our past classes what is Maya. What is Maya? Seeming suffering, happiness and unhappiness, both combined. We call it duality, dvandva. And it looks as though the goodness, the happy part of it is very less and the suffering part of it, the evil part of it seems to be terrible. And there do not seem to be any solution. So Swamiji gave this beautiful answer in three stages. Here we are to learn our lessons. Is it life is a school. And then what we learned, we have to practice in this life. That is called gymnasium. And once we reach God, God realization, then the whole life is nothing but a beautiful circus, drama, whatever you call it. That is the answer he gave. We will be in a position now to understand the theory of Maya. So Swamiji, questions. In all the religions of the world, the one question they propose to discuss is this. Why is there disharmony in the universe? Why is there this evil in the universe? Remember, when we are discussing this question of evil from Vedantic point of view, and that's what Swami Vivekananda is telling, always keep in mind, by evil is not meant only suffering. Evil is meant duality, good and bad, happiness and unhappiness. When we are happy, we don't raise this question, why is there so much evil in this world? We have to raise. So why is there this duality in this world? That's what he means. We do not find this question in the very inception of primitive religious ideas. Let me remind you, what are the topic of we are discussing? Swami Vivekananda, Maya and the evolution of the concept of God. This question of evil, was it there from the very beginning? Swami says, no. We do not find this question in the very inception of primitive religious ideas. In the primitive religious man, we do not have. First, because the world did not appear incongruous to the primitive man. Primitive man never felt, why is there so much evil in this world? Can we understand this statement? Yes, with one example. Let me give an example. When we are children, go back to your childhood. When you are 2 years, 3 years, 4 years old, did you ever think, why is there so much of evil in this world? Never. But you thought of one thing. You know two things. There is happiness and there is unhappiness. There is pain and there is pleasure. And our struggle is to reduce the pain or get rid of it and run. Whenever we have a problem, you know what we do? We just run to the mother. However much we run to the mother, there are certain things which cannot be avoided even for babies. You know what is it? Suppose baby has got a stomachache. He is suffering and he cannot explain it what he is suffering from. So he will run to the mother. Mother also, of course, she takes the baby in her lap and hugs the baby. But the mother also suffers. She doesn't know what is the reason. That's why even today, we don't know. No mother knows. We have to take to the doctor and the doctor has to find out so many things. Pain is there. Do you see what I am driving at? Can the baby understand what is evil, goodness and evil, happiness and unhappiness? Are they same? No. Happiness and unhappiness, pain and pleasure, purely on the physical level felt by the mind. But the question, why when you ask, then comes the question, evil and goodness. Do you see the difference? Is a philosophical question. For a primitive man, this did not exist at all. Circumstances were not inharmonious for him. For one reason, his whole time was spent only in one. How to survive, how to escape from danger. Only two things, how to be safe and how to survive. There is no time for him to think what is good, what is evil. But pain and pain, suffering and happiness, that is there. There was merely a feeling in his own heart of something which said, yeah, and something which said, nay. He says, this is good. Yes, let me go. This is not good. No, I should run away from here. That much he knows. But this question of good and evil, why the whole world is suffering, whether there is a creator, and all these things came much later. What are we talking about? Maya and the concept of the evolution of God. The primitive man was a man of impulse. Can you understand now? A baby is a man of what? He knows only impulse. That's all, nothing else. And even now we are not better than babies. That's why Swamiji coined a new phrase, mustached babies. The primitive man was a man of impulse. He did what occurred to him and tried to bring out through his muscles whatever thought came into his mind. And he never stopped to judge and seldom tried to check his impulses. There was no idea of good or evil in a primitive person. How wonderful. Swamiji is tracing the development of mentality. What a wonderful thing it is. This is the first thing we learned. What is it? Primitive man is a man of impulse. He has absolutely no philosophical idea. The idea of evil and goodness is a philosophical idea. That idea is not there in a primitive person, in a baby also, even now. But with the advance of man came the ethical ideas and also came the fight. That is where Swamiji takes us to the next level of development called Pravritti and Nivritti. Let me read. There arose a certain sense in man. Call it the voice of God or the result of past education or whatever else you like. There is something. But the effect was this, that it had a checking power upon the natural impulses of man. Just as a child, as soon as he grows up a little, then he gets this power of, you know, do you remember marshmallow test? Yes, all of us have to go through this marshmallow test. There comes some voice, no, stop, don't go headlong like an emotional person, impulsive person. This is what happens. There is one impulse in our minds which says, do. That means, go and do something. But behind it rises another voice which says, no, do not. There is one set of ideas in our mind which is always struggling to get outside through the channels of the senses. And behind that, although it may be thin and weak, there is an infinitely small voice which says, do not go outside. And there are two beautiful Sanskrit words for this phenomena. They are pravritti and nivritti. Circling forward and circling inward. It is the circling forward which usually governs our actions. Pravritti. Where all people, animals are distinguished from thinking man. And what is the animal and what is the thinking man? You know, Swami Vivekananda's contribution. He digested world's advanced ideas and put it in simple language for us. Our evolution goes through three stages. Instinct, reason, and Swami used to say, until you develop intuition, you have to be intuition. Every evolution has to go through three stages. Instinct, reason, and intuition. Approaching truth through instinct, animal stage. Approaching truth through reason is human stage. Approaching truth through intuition without the intervention of anything, that is called God realization, saintliness, spiritual progress, whatever you call it. These are the three stages. But just because we are born human beings, it doesn't mean we have developed intuition. Most of us even today are becoming what? Animals you cannot blame. But human beings, are they rational? If you say Aristotle's word, you know, man is a rational and social animal. I have never heard another irrational statement. How many people you find rational person? Give a certificate to 1% of the people whom you know he is a rational person. All of us, we give certificate. I am the most rational person in this world. Everybody else is irrational. Do you understand what I am talking just now? I called you irrational. That means what? I am very rational. Do you understand what I am talking about? There is an infinitely small voice which says, do not go outside. It is religion begins with this, do not go outside. Do not go outside. That is called Sanskrit what? Nivritti. Nivritti means the solution, the answer you are seeking outside. There is no such answer outside. Where is it? Inside. Kaschid dhiraha avrutta chikshu amrutatvam ichyan. It's a beautiful Upanishadic vakya. Kaschid dhiraha. There was a great wise man. He understood. Going out is no solution. So what did he do? Avritta chakshuhu. He closed his eyes. Means what? He turned his search inside, within. For what reason? Amritatvam ichyan. Desiring immortality. That is the only way. There is no other way. So if you are influenced by Sri Ramakrishna or any saint, what do? You close it. You hear his teaching, you close your eyes. What are you trying to do? Meditate upon that saint, is it not? Meditate upon God, meditate upon Guru, meditate upon the saint, meditate on the scriptures. Meditation means not going to sleep. Spirituality begins with this do not. When the do not is not there, religion has not begun. And this do not came, it came, nivritti came, causing men's ideas to grow despite the fighting gods which they had worshipped. Let me comment upon it. This nivritti, in course of time, maybe after a long time, in the course of evolution, this idea came. The solution is not outside. It is inside, within. We are talking about the concept of the evolution of gods. So our ideas about God also, at the beginning, you know, we don't find them irrational. Indra comes, Indra drinks, Jehovah. He bestows his grace only upon one particular person and he destroys the other person. This was primitive idea. Even now there are religions which are trying to propagate this idea. Think over it. But still, society, there are people who are in that pravritti state. There are people, a few, in whom this nivritti started. And there are people who are growing in the idea of Nivritti. That is the idea. As soon as this Nivritti started growing, what happens? Man became thoughtful. As soon as he became thoughtful, his God also has become thoughtful. And as he started growing, the idea of God also started growing. This is what Swamiji left. Then what is the result of it? A little love awoke in the hearts of mankind. It was very small indeed. And even now it is not much greater. It was at first confined to a tribe, embracing perhaps members of the same tribe. These gods loved their tribes, and each god was a tribal god, the protector of only that tribe. You see, one of the major religions, they call it covenant. What is covenant? We worship you as the only god, and you protect, complete the sentence, only us. Not anybody else, because we worship you and you protect everybody who do not worship you also, then khabardar. Only this is called covenant, agreement, contract. A little love awoke. Love means what? That the people who worship this kind of God, that is called a tribe. A tribe always has something to bind them, binding force. And that binding force is a little bit of God. And as soon as this love came for the God, the same love spread itself to other human beings too. This is one of the tremendous ideas. The moment you love God and you say, I love only God and nobody else, that's not love. You know what is the meaning of God here? God means everything. But that idea of everything is confined only to a particular tribe, race, sect, etc. That is what happened. When these members of the same tribe embracing and loving only members of the same tribe, these gods loved their tribes, and each god was a tribal god, the protector of that tribe, and not any other tribe. So when these tribal ideas began to grow, there came a little love, some slight idea of duty towards each other, and a little social organization. What a marvelous way of developing ideas. Developing ideas. Swami was developing. What happened first? This thought came. Thoughtfulness came. And thoughtfulness made them expand. Who was the first victim of that expansion? God. As soon as God came, this is the God whom we are all worshipping, and therefore we all belong to the same God. In fact, Swamiji says, you know, in India, some families claim their lineage to Surya Deva or Chandra. Suri Vamsha and Chandra Vamsha, you know, Pandavas, Ramachandra belongs to which Vamsha? And that means we have to stick to each other. That was the idea that was there. But then a little love came. And with the idea of love grows another idea. What is the idea? Duty towards other. And with the idea of duty comes another idea. See how beautifully Swamiji is stressing. What is that idea? Since there would be so many differences between one and other human beings, there should be tolerance. So you see, the Nivritti, thoughtfulness. And that means the idea is transferred to God. And that idea of God became love of God. That love of God became love of tribe. Love of tribe became that we have to look after each other. And that idea brought to this, we also have to be tolerant towards each other because all of us are not the same. Indeed, we do practice it now in our day-to-day life. A mother has got three children. One is a baby, another is adolescent, another is grown-up boy. She loves everybody, but she has to be very tolerant. If this eldest one throws tantrums and then doesn't make up his bed, how does the mother treat him? Will the baby make up the bed? How does the mother treat him? Yes, do you see? That mother understands these are babies, not grown up, they cannot do. Similarly, this idea, you know, we love each other because we belong to the same caste, same tribe, etc. And therefore, we have a duty to help each other. And along with the idea of duty also came the idea of what? Tolerance. What a marvelous idea, tolerance. Now, let me expand it in brackets. We are all children of Sri Ramakrishna, or the direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna. This is because Sri Ramakrishna loved all of them, because they loved Sri Ramakrishna, they became what? Brother disciples. As soon as they became brother disciples, Mind you, they were not all same. There will be some problems would be there. And then, but they developed that idea, we have to help each other and we have to bear and forbear with each other. Very naturally, these ideas will come. Swamiji is telling, a little social organization has come. That is how society has become. What a beautiful development. Then, naturally, the idea came. How can we live together without bearing and forbearing? How can one man live with another without having some time or other to check his impulses, to restrain himself, to forbear from doing things which his mind would prompt him to do? It's impossible. Thus comes the idea of restraint. The whole social fabric is based upon that idea of restraint. And we all know that the man or woman who has not learned the great lesson of bearing and forbearing leads a most miserable life. Here is one psychological principle. What is that? The law of happiness. What is it? That man or woman who did not learn how to bear and forbear leads what? A most miserable life. So what is the lesson? If any one of us want to lead a happy life, we have to learn how to bear and forbear. This was one of the teachings Sri Ramakrishna had emphasized again and again, and in his own punny way. He said, all letters in the alphabet have only one, but there is one letter which has three variations. In Sanskrit, sa, sha, sa. Sha, sha, and sa. But in Bengali, all are pronounced. So he made pun and they said, why there are three times this one? Sho, sho, sho. Bear, bear. If you want to be happy, you have to bear so many things in this world. What a wonderful thing. Bear what? Three things you have to bear. What is, you know, we call it tapatraya, adhyatmika, adhibhautika, and adhidaivika. We can have problems from three sources. Body, outside, and divine sources, natural forces, etc. When a tsunami comes, what are you going to do? When it is winter, what are you going to do? When body falls sick, what are you going to do? When your circumstances change, what are you going to do? Do you see what is the idea? Sure. Bear and forbear. Here is Swamiji telling a most wonderful idea. If you want to be happy, and I can guarantee you, if you can bear and forbear, you will be a very happy person. That is one way to be happiest person on earth. Don't go and buy rush outside and burn self-help book, how to be happy all the time. That is also good. Now, when these ideas of religion came, a glimpse of something higher, more ethical, dawned upon the intellect of mankind. The old gods were found to be incongruous. Therefore, man gave up these gods. Therefore, primitive man gave up these gods. But Swamiji is changing the language. Rather, they developed higher ideas concerning them. Giving up gods means what? They developed better ideas about God. When we develop better ideas about gods, it is the death of the old ideas. Look at our Puranas. Look at our Vedic gods. Rudra. You know what is Rudra? Very ferocious. He will just finish you, smash you, makes you first class chutney. Yes, that is, but that very Rudra had become transformed into the modern Shiva. Shiva means what? Most auspicious. Most auspicious. Shiva will grant you moksha. That old idea of death, destruction, etc. has become, in course of time, it took time, has been transformed into the modern idea. So the old idea of gods, the modern idea of gods are not the same. There were so many gods. Ultimately, the 33 crores of Hindu gods and goddesses convulsed into three aspects of one god. The creator, the sustainer, and the destroyer. Destroyer means what? Going back to the always you remember, what is the Srishti? Bringing something which remains unmanifest into manifestation is called creation. Maintaining that is called Sthiti. And the what is manifested going back into its unmanifested state is called Laya. Always remember that. It is not death, it is not destruction, it is not non-existence. Merely giving up certain inconvenient formations and going back. That is why death has no meaning for a Vedanta. It is just a transition from one body to and from a old body to a new body. And here, somebody asked one of our Swamis, I think it was Premeshanandi, Swami, a person lives 90 years, 100 years, his body has become old and worn out. It is very natural that he gives up that body and puts on a new body. But what about a child who died at 5 years old? He says, yes, for that child, the purpose for which that body has been assumed, that job is finished. That means that is no longer valid. And he gave a beautiful example. You know, you get into a train at one station. You have work in another station. And you have got wonderful companions sitting by your side. And the train journey, 1 hour, 3 hours, whatever, very pleasant. And you are so happy to be introduced, to be talking, your destiny comes. What will you do? Oh, my companions are so good. Let me continue. Will you do that? No. What will you do? Then some people get down. You also have to get down at your own station. So two things will happen. Some people get down, your own companions with whom you forged a strong friendship, they will get down, finished. You are never, perhaps ever going to see them. And when your time comes, you leave them and get down. Some people leave you and you leave some people. This is how. But then I added a little bit, you know, in airports, Chicago, etc., there is this driverless trains are there. Beautiful. So you get inside it. What is the train doing? Going round and round and round and round. That is called Brahma Chakra. In that Brahma Chakra, some people get in and all people get in at some station and get out at some other station. We are all like that. And in Sanskrit, there is a beautiful verse which says, you know, this life, this world is like a huge stream going towards the ocean. It came from the ocean and it is going towards the ocean. And two sticks, they join and they stick together. And some bush or something comes, they get unstuck. After some time, they get another stick. Then they stick together. Then they get unstuck. The sticking and unsticking is going on until the river takes you into the ocean and the end of your journey. This is what Swami Vivekananda is saying. As man grows, he gives up these gods, rather they develop a higher idea concerning them, and the old ideas have been destroyed, new ideas have been replaced, the old ideas. New ideas replace the old ideas about God. And as we replace our idea about ourselves, so also we replace the idea about everything else in this world. And I want to give an example. Narendranath, Swami Vivekananda, it was called Narendranath. He was extremely fond of Sita Rama. So immediately he went and bought beautiful images of Sita Rama, and day and night he was bringing flowers and fruits and offering to them and everything. You know, whatever he does, he was very intense about it. Unfortunately, his ideal hero at that time, they had a coach. And the coachman, you know, he puts on that pagadi and all that, sits on a high seat in front, and he was the ideal. When I grow up, I want to become like this coachman. So Narendranath was always hanging and running behind this coachman. What happened? This coachman was a married man, and his wife jilted him. And he developed Vedanta idea. And he understood Naren was worshipping Sita Rama. So he brainwashed him. What? You are worshipping those married gods. Marriage is the worst thing anybody can do in this world. And so much so that Naren was completely brainwashed. He went and one day threw out the images of Sita and Rama. But the coachman, you know, he said, Lord Shiva. Do you know what he did? He divorced his wife, went to Himalayas and merged himself in meditation. Immediately Narendranath went and bought one image of Shiva in meditation and he started worshipping him. What happened? The household married God is not worthy of being worshipping. How his mind was evolving slowly. I just want to know that this is how each one of us grow and grow and grow. Therefore, man gave up these gods, rather, man developed higher ideas concerning them. Then comes the idea, not so many gods. Because as we quarrel, gods also quarrel. So long as we quarrel with each other, our idea of God also will be like that only. God is also will quarrel. Until we get rid of the idea of quarreling, our gods also will be unable to stop quarreling. What is the way? There is only one way. There should not be too many gods. There should be only one God. I can cite so many historical evidences, but I will give you one hint. You know, when Muhammad came, what was his first thing he did? Before Muhammad, those tribes were worshipping hundreds of gods. Each tribe was worshipping one particular god. In fact, this present Mecca, all the images of big, small and different varieties of figures were there all round that Mecca. What Muhammad did, he wanted to unite all the tribes. And to unite the tribes, there is only one. He must unite all the tribal gods into one. And so he proclaimed, that is why even today the prayer starts. There is no God but God. The first God is lower, small, G-O-D, referring to various types of manifestations of God. But the later on God, but God means capital letter G. I mean, there is only, this is called development of monotheistic idea. There is only one God. In Sanskrit, he is called Devadi Deva, is the God of the gods. As man's ideas developed, his idea of God also has developed. We have come today's talk up to how the general idea of gods have coalesced into there must be only one God. But it created terrible ethical problems, which we will discuss in our next class. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.